Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
From the remote and somewhat warmer jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, this is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio as we reach around the world to all of our listeners and across North America, and a big hello to Paragon, Indiana, which we know they're tuning in tonight. As always, we'll have our Wild World news. Our very special guest tonight, before I go any further, quite honored, Jimmy Greenspoon from the band that has sold more records between 1969 and 1974 than anybody, Three Dog Night. He's going to be with us with lots of great stories, so this should be a historical, memorable evening, and we're really looking forward to it.
Pretty cool.
Yes, very cool. Our studio producer tonight is Billy Willard from the fine state of Virginia and from the Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, now HD, newly renovated, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. You know, it's nice tonight. We've got a little rock and roll history going on here.
We've got a legend on the show.
Yes, I'm excited
Bet
about
you.
It. Yeah, I got to see Three Dog Night. I'm guessing it was, it's back in those days, 71, 72.
Mm-hmm.
At the, I guess it would be at Market Square Arena. And it was one of the greatest shows I ever saw. Everybody came down off of the stage, the brass section, went through the audience, playing their instruments. It was just a fantastic evening.
They filled up hundreds of arenas.
I think the tickets were like $6.50.
That's I remember the time we went and saw acquaintance of Jimmy Greenspoon's, Jimi Hendrix, at the State Fairgrounds Coliseum. The tickets were $3, $4, and $5.
Yeah.
Too expensive.
That's the voice of Jimmy Greenspoon. And we've come a long way. This portion of Wild World is brought to you by TotaquaLakeBigfoot.com. Go to their website, Chautauqua Lake, Chautauqua, and you have a chance to download the recent conference that we were part of in New York. It's only $4.99 for over 6 hours of material. If you are a fan of the Discovery Channel, Not Finding Bigfoot, I call it, some of the other programs they've had on, be sure you check out the video with Billy Willard, myself, Steve Coles, Melissa Hovey, and the infamous Bob Gimlin. They make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for March 13th. Well, it's 37 degrees in Naptown tonight, and we're enjoying it because it's actually kind of warm. even though we had close to 70 degree temperature on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be warm tomorrow too. 61 they're calling for. Can't wait.
Outside recess.
The voice of Mrs. Swihart, our first grade teacher. Outside recess, that's right.
Oh, yeah, please.
All right, now, our first story tonight, we've been reporting on the problem with the bats for the last few years. Well, here's some good news from Montpelier, Vermont. The white nose syndrome has killed millions of bats over the last 10 years. Well, Scott Daring, a biologist with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, thinks the worst part of the white nose syndrome epidemic is over, at least for one of the afflicted species, the little brown bat.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's beginning to recover. Now, as we know, it's killed tens of thousands of bats in just the past decade.
Mm.
And so any good news about those little guys coming back?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the bat that we usually have flying around our security light comes back this spring, or comes out of hibernation, I should say.
Well, hopefully, because we need those little guys more than people believe. They pollinate flowers. You know, crops, also
eat
keep
mosquitoes.
The population down, yes.
Eat mosquitoes. You know, a colony of bats will eat 2,000 pounds of mosquitoes in a season. That's a lot. Think about that.
Whoa.
2,000 pounds.
When I was stationed in El Paso, I used to go to Carlsbad Caverns quite often just to get away from base. And I'd watch the bats come out of Carlsbad Cavern during the summer. Unbelievable.
I'll bet.
250,000 bats come out at night from an opening that is basically level with the ground.
Oh,
and it's like a tornado.
I'll bet.
You can lean over and they'll brush your face as they come out.
Very cool.
One of my favorite things.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've got a new terrapin resort in Nevada Beach, Florida. The Sea Turtle Conservation Center this month will begin the facility's expansion, including a construction of a pool to house non-releasable sea turtles. That are sea turtles that are too injured to be out on their own. Now, the beach is home to endangered sea turtle species that annually nest on its shores.
Oh, that's awesome.
So when the turtles come in, if there's any problems, they take them and they're going to have a new place to stay.
Wow, that's
and
fantastic.
Probably get a free turtle wax. All right. What's
You're
worth
so funny.
What's worth more than gold? Well, golden eagles. Price,
oh, there you
Utah.
Go.
Two golden eagles have been released back into the wild after months of rehabilitation. The male and female flew off a cliff at Dead Horse State Park.
Well, that's cool, too. You've got good stories.
We do what we can to save nature. Well, on the same note, Quincy, Illinois, a bald eagle named General that was found injured in an animal trap last month, was released after being nursed back to health at the Raptor Rehabilitation Center there in Quincy.
Oh, that's fantastic.
People
that's
doing
great.
Good work out there.
They are.
Keep it up.
We support them.
All right, sea lions and sea smelt. Woodland, Washington, hungry sea lions have followed smelt up the Columbia River into some of the tributaries there. Now, the feeding sea lions have drawn hundreds of onlookers at the Lewis River to watch them eat the smelt.
Well,
he who smelt it
did it.
All right, now for our bayou buddies in Louisiana, I got some bad news for you. The long cold winter means crawfish are scarce, small, and expensive.
Oh,
now the restaurants usually charge $3 to $4 a pound for boiled crawfish, but the price is nearly doubled across the state.
Oh my goodness!
Eat chicken.
Yeah, eat chicken.
So, and if you're out there hunting them crawdads, you need to beware. In New Orleans, the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has hired marksmen to shoot feral pigs from helicopters.
What?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And we know that the hogs do a lot of damage to the local wildlife and, you know, plants and stuff. But, yeah, just be careful. You don't want to be mistaken for a hog.
In other words, you don't want to wear a hog costume and be lurking around
that
down
probably
there.
Wouldn't be a good idea.
That's
now,
good.
As we know, it's illegal to take anything from any state park anywhere.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. If you find something there, you have to leave it.
No, it's trash.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, for instance, in Casper, Wyoming, wildlife officials are reminding state residents that gathering shed horns and antlers is prohibited on most of the public lands. And that goes with most of our state parks.
You know what eats those horns? You have any idea, Dr. Day?
I know porcupines.
There you go. Ding, 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 ding.
What do I win?
Oh, shiny new dime.
A weed.
Yeah, porcupines, you're right.
Yeah, see, isn't that interesting?
It is, yeah.
That they can eat those horns.
Well, other rodents will, too. I mean, they'll chew them up as well. But, yeah, porcupine's the main one.
All right, ooh, what's that smell? Well, that smell is the stinky evidence of winter's toll on fish. Yeah, as we reported a couple of weeks ago with the very cold winter and the freezing and thawing and refreezing, it's wreaked havoc on a lot of our fish and amphibious friends. Well, that stinky smell is coming from Beaver Creek in York, Nebraska. The lack of water flow over the spillway has limited the amount of oxygen regeneration in the water.
Hmm.
So that is going to be the problem here in the Midwest.
Whoa.
It's going to smell like low tide all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, now this next story is going to make you mad.
Oh.
Helena, Montana.
You're doing
wildlife
so well.
Officials have killed an adult female mountain lion that had taken up residence in a neighborhood. And supposedly the cat killed three house cats. Now, Dave Lowen, the warden there, said he decided against tranquilizing the lion because it would take up to 15 minutes, posing a danger to people.
Oh, my goodness.
Get the people back.
My gosh.
That's not a hard one to figure out there. I mean,
what an imbecile to even say that. I mean,
yeah. I told you, you weren't going to be happy.
I'm not
happy. Happy.
Yeah, mountain lions are important. If the mountain lions are there, there's a reason. So it's like
that's
the
right.
Folks in Southern California buy these houses and want to live out in the wilds, and they complain about the coyotes and mountain lions. Well, you moved in their house, darn it. So get over it.
Yep.
That's right.
Keep your cats inside. Right, Jimmy?
Right. You have to adapt to them.
Yeah.
Their house.
That's right.
Now, you've used mountain lions in your school programs before.
Oh, I've had some wonderful mountain lions. Chuck, he was awesome. When we were doing publicity for Wild Kingdom, I remember taking him into a couple of radio stations. We'd lead him in. He'd hop right up on the counter and just lay there. He'd lay there all darn day if we'd let him.
Chuck was beautiful. Yes, he was.
He was fantastic. And he was not declawed. So, yeah. We just don't do that. I just don't believe in it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? My son and his fiance got a cat, and they will not get her declawed.
It's cruel.
Yeah.
It's not right.
Although she's staying at my house this week, and I don't like her scratching my couch.
Well, you have to put some cat away spray on your couch.
You know what we did? We put tape, the sticky part of tape, double-sided tape.
Mm-hmm.
She won't touch it.
There you go.
Yep. But no one else can sit on the couch either.
Well, here's what I'd do. I'd go out and get a piece of wood long enough to prop up somewhere, and she'll use that piece of wood.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you'll just have to clean up some little wood scratchings.
There you go. Very well done, Dr. Day. Thank you.
All right. Now, Mrs. Swihart, now here's something that maybe your class could do to help out nature. We're heading off to Concord, New Hampshire. Some elementary school students are playing a key role in an effort to protect the state butterfly. Now, the students are preparing food for the Karner blue butterfly, once considered extinct in the state. How are the children going to do this? Well, they're going to help grow and plant lupins.
Mm.
Well, that's cool.
Yes, just by planting a flower, we can help the butterfly population.
Well, that'd be a great project for a first grade class to do.
You know what? Well, we have a new school. I mean, our school is just a few years old, and one of the things that they did when they designed the school is they incorporated these, you know, little garden areas, and all of the plants that are planted there were planted with attracting, you know, those kinds of things. So we have a lot of things that attract butterflies. And, of course, they fly around like crazy, and the kids like to chase them when they're outside at recess. But we're pretty fortunate to have that. I mean, that's
awesome.
Yeah. So in our kindergarten and second grade also, you know, studies butterflies pretty in-depth. So and they release them outside after they raise them. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do a lot with them here. But we have butterfly bushes, all sorts of things outside my window.
No.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I used to collect praying mantis cocoons. Well, I'd usually leave them in the garage, but one winter I brought them into the house to examine them, and I left them in the basement near the furnace. Well, there were 40 praying mantis cocoons, and I couldn't count all of the baby praying mantises, but they covered the walls, the ceilings, the floors. Yes, my mother was not happy, and this was like in the middle of January.
Yeah, nice. It's not like you're going to go take them outside and let them go.
Is there any video of this, Dr. Day?
My mother went through a lot when I was growing up.
They didn't have video when he was a kid.
Oh, that's true. They were still using, never mind.
It was projectors.
There was the time I had 40 garter snakes get loose in the basement.
Yeah.
My mother found them for months.
Oh.
There's a snake under the bucket down there. Go get him.
Oh, God bless your mother.
Yes. Yeah. All right. On with the local news. Now, here's an interesting story. Auburn, Indiana. The FBI plans to return a .45 caliber Thompson machine gun stolen by the members of the John Dillinger gang to the police department from which it was stolen. The gun was stolen on October 14th, 1933, along with a bulletproof vest, ammunition, and other firearms.
No.
Hmm.
Well, I'll be darned.
1933, they're just now returning it?
A little late.
Yeah.
Better late than never.
A little slow there, boys.
All right. Also in the local news, here in town tomorrow night, the Pat Metheny Group will be at the Palladium.
Yes.
Also in town, Crosby, Stills, and Nash will be at the Murat Theater.
Oh, my.
And on this day in 1925, the Tennessee General Assembly approved a bill prohibiting the teaching of the theory of evolution.
Oh, now that I mentioned about it, Jimmy Green's been played with Stephen Stills, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Well, Stephen will be here tomorrow night.
Wow.
Also, on March 13th, Neil Sedaka is 75 years old.
That's all wild world news.
75 years young.
That's right. Also, in the music world, there's going to be a new Jimi Hendrix stamp.
Oh.
It's pretty cool. I've seen it. It's called the Jimi Hendrix Forever stamp, and it shows him on the front jamming with a Strat.
Well, once again, another friend of Jimmy Green's.
Yes. I hope it looks better than the Elvis stamp.
Yeah, this one looks pretty good. I think you'll like it.
Yes, yeah. He retained that boyish looks right up until his demise, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they don't have a fat Hendrix. They have a fat Elvis.
the fat Elvis stamp, but yeah, the skinny
that's right.
Hendrix. That's cool.
Yeah, very
all
cool.
Right, well, I'm excited to get Jimmy on. Let's be done with this wild world news for March 13th.
Well, once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now HD, newly renovated, and it's absolutely spectacular. We also want to mention my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. It tells all about our wildlife rescue work that we do, tigers and gators and monkeys, you name it, and also our wildlife education programs, which we take across the country. So we encourage you to check that out, and you can contact us through that site at www.LarryTheAnimalGuy.com and also our Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, with all the latest happenings to our animal family right here on Wild World. Now it's that time, everybody, our favorite first grade teacher, Mrs. Swihart.
See the first grade kids are rocking out to Kiss, but that's cool.
You know what? These first graders all know that their teacher loves Kiss. They don't know that their teacher also loves to Kiss. But, and I love each Kisses. They know that too. But, yeah, they're all familiar. They've all heard of the rock and roll band Kiss just because, I don't know. But
well,
anyway.
I have a question. Is 3 Dog Night Before Your Time, Mrs. Swihart, I know you're just a child.
No, it's not.
Okay,
well, I'm not sure, actually. I mean, I know of a lot of the songs, so.
Oh,
but I don't
good.
Know the frame. Tell me, Jimmy, what's the time frame? Like, when one was a hit, what year was that?
Early 69.
There you go.
Ooh, I am a 69 baby.
There you go.
You wrote that song for me. Pretty sure of it.
Yes, that's true.
Exactly. I will just say that it was for me. Wait, no, there's probably a better song that you that would be apply to me than maybe that one. But yeah, I'm a summer of 69 girl. But,
well, what's happening in the first grade?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, way to change the subject.
Yeah.
You're a little scared of that number 69, are you?
No, I'm go ahead.
You know, it's Dr. Seuss. We've gone crazy with Dr. Seuss. And I love Dr. Seuss. It's full of a lot of nonsense words, of course. We can pull so many things from it to teach. The rhyming, I did a lot with homophones recently. But one of the highlights of Dr. Seuss' time here is the message behind his stories. And I actually did a lot with the Lorax, which, you know, has to do with not cutting down all the trees and getting rid of those habitats for the creatures. And my kids, you know, kind of dressed like Lorax. We made a video. I posted it on Facebook and sent it to all their parents. But and then tonight it was featured in tonight's paper in our town. So that was really cool.
In Warsaw, Indiana.
In Warsaw, Indiana. That's right. So you know what? So many things today. I feature a different book every day. Today I featured the Butter Battle book, which has to do with people getting along, not fighting over things so silly as buttering your bread on the top or the bottom. Which, you know what? I mean, that sounds silly.
That drives me crazy all the time.
First of all, okay, I will say, who the hell butters their bread on the bottom? You know? I mean, no one. But I will tell you that the Zooks do. And so we had the Yooks versus the Zooks, and I slathered some bread. And I laid plastic out on the floor, and we did an experiment. We brought science into it and tossed that bread into the air and to see how it would land, butter side down or butter side up. And We graphed our data, and we analyzed it, and, of course, it landed butter side down most of the time. This is a valuable lesson here. And, you know, so it was science. But you know what? The real true.
This is in first grade? I missed all this in first grade.
Yeah, you need to come and join us.
The butter bread tossing.
Well, that was the science part of it.
Oh,
and
okay.
Also math, because we graphed our data. But I will tell you, the true meaning.
Graphed our data.
What?
I'm so sorry.
I know. You're making fun of me, but hey, I know. But you know, the thing is, the discussion that was had on the carpet in my classroom today about people fighting in the world over stupid and silly things would bring tears to most people's eyes. I mean, these little first graders that can't believe that people would fight over that stuff enough that people are hurting people, you know, so that's pretty heavy moment in Dr. Seuss, if you want, and valuable lesson. But anyway.
Yes, of course. Did you have a favorite Dr. Seuss book, Jimmy, when you were growing up?
No, I skipped Dr. Seuss until much later on when I started watching Sesame Street.
Oh.
Like On the Road with Three Dog Night, that's like. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, like
these
Beaker.
Kids don't even
Beaker
know.
Beaker was my idol, you know, Dr. Bunsen Honeydew and The Count, and it's like, yeah.
Well,
no, there wasn't a Dr. Seuss book, but some of my friends thought he was a little strange, but then again, my friends were strange, so.
Yeah.
My students don't even know really what Sesame Street is.
Really?
Yeah, that's kind of a thing of the past. I mean,
and,
you know, it's still around, but, I mean, there's so many other options out there that are more appealing to kids these days, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because a lot of that stuff that's out there is junk, you know. I mean, the reality of it is Sesame Street is still one of the better options. So
yeah, it's more a kind of an adult show, but then again, I would like to get a covert operation and kidnap that purple dinosaur.
Barney. Okay, Barney's history. He really is.
Really, please.
I love you.
My nephew, when he was growing up, said that there should have been only one Barney show. Barney should have came out, ate the kids, and then that would have been it. That was it.
Yeah, the show's over. Of course, we scared the kids for life. But I mean, I was the big Howdy Doody fan, you know, way back when I was growing up.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And then, of course, the bit of trivia I'll throw this in. You probably know it, but Clarabelle the clown was actually Bob Keeshan, who played Captain Kangaroo for all those years.
And Captain Kangaroo, Mr. Green Jeans.
Oh, Mr. Green Jeans,
City Art, they're the best.
And Bunny Rabbit.
Bunny Rabbit. They just don't make shows like that anymore.
No, they don't. They should.
And take a look at society now.
Yeah, look at it. Yeah.
Tonight we're going to be talking to Jimmy Greenspoon.
Yes.
Yep.
So
yeah,
that's it for the first grade.
You know what? We don't have school a lot these days. So I mean, what do you want me to do?
Sure.
I mean, geez. You know, we got done. I covered a whole thing on the presidents, which was really, really good. I will tell you that I am so blown away. Our principal came in the room, and I said to him, I said to the kids, boys and girls, do you want to share anything you've learned about presidents with Mr. Klein, our principal? And every hand went up, and I could not believe. I wonder all the time if they're actually listening to me, you know, like you guys probably aren't right now.
Yeah.
But I wonder all the time if they actually listen to me. And some of the words we talk about are pretty big words for first grade, but I'll tell you what, I think almost every kid in my class can associate Abraham Lincoln with the Civil War and why the Civil War took place, and then George Washington with the Revolutionary War and who we fought with and, you know, why. And so that's pretty huge because there are a lot of adults that cannot do that.
That's right.
So, very impressed with them.
Wow.
So we did a lot of that. And, you know, I can tell you a couple of funnies or a funny story.
Okay.
I know how you like to hear the funnies.
Yeah.
I got this new hair thing that curls my hair really kind of cool. It gives me really springy curls.
Mm.
And one of the kids said last week, Mrs. Swihart, I know why you have those curls in your hair, because they look like springs, and it's because spring is coming. Yeah. And it happened to be a really nice day. So I'm like, absolutely. Well, the next day was really crappy, and I had done my hair straight.
Yeah.
Mrs. Swihart, you know, if you would have done the springy hair, we wouldn't have this day today with this weather. Like, perfect. So now they think I've got the power.
So it's your fault.
It is totally my fault.
Now we know who to blame.
I know.
Well, wonderful. From Warsaw, Indiana, our lovely Mrs. Swihart, our teacher of the year. And it's time. Boy, we're so excited, folks. Our guest tonight, Jimmy Greenspoon. And we've got a little taste. Well, we've got the new stuff from Three Dog Night we're very excited about right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear the prayer of the children on bended knees in the shadow of an unknown empty eyes, with no more tears to cry, turning heavenward toward the light. Will someone help me to see the morning light one more day? But if I should die before I wake, I pray my soul to take. Can you feel the hearts of the children aching for home, for something of their very own? Reaching hands with nothing to hold on to but hope for a better day, a better day. Will someone help me to feel the love of again in my own land. But if I'm known roads lead away from home, give me loving arms away from harm.
Difficult tune to do. That's the first time in our 46-year history that we've done a six-part harmony a cappella tune.
Wow.
And it was written for, it was written by a gentleman whose name escapes me right now, but he wrote it for all the kids. It's apropos for anything, any harm that has come to children in wars, in tragedies, in daily things, and it was a very poignant tune. And we used that as an encore tune and do that live, which was really tough to do. But once we got it down, it's like, whoa, people are out there getting their drinks and doing whatever, and then we start that, and it's just like you can hear a pin drop.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's spectacular. I can't even imagine hearing that live.
Gracious. Yeah, when are you going to? Are you guys going to tour and sing that to me? To the people around me?
Somewhere in Indiana we're playing. Bring all the first grade kids. Yeah.
I don't want to go with the first grade kids. There's a thing called grown up time.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, never mind.
Well, that's spectacular. Yeah. Gosh. And of course, Three Dog Night was always known for their amazing vocals. From the very beginning. And the arenas, as I've been trying to tell folks, I can even remember the State Fairgrounds Coliseum where the Beatles played here in 1964. Three Dog Night rolled in there, and they sold every darn ticket to that place. And that acoustic nightmare, which was the Coliseum, they made it seem like he was in one of the greatest musical halls ever designed for artists, and you guys pulled it off.
Yeah, that was I remember that place. That was nice. And the Market Square Arena and all the other wonderful outdoor venues and sheds and amphitheaters and other great places.
Yeah. And, of course, my good friend Steve Kennedy, who plays music, he said, when you talk to Jimmy, he said, please tell him of how awesome his organ piece was in Have a Little Tenderness.
Oh, tell them thank you.
Truly amazing, And I can even remember Chess Fever is one of the great songs that Three Dog Night would do, and always spectacular.
Thank you. Yeah, that was all the first album stuff in 1968. So that was pretty much recorded in, one or two days. So that was kind of live in the studio, more or less.
Wow.
Very little overdubs.
You know, we're here with royalty folks because as I was going through information about Jimmy, and this is wild. Are you listening, Dr. Day?
Yep.
His godfather was Jack Benny.
Is that right?
How did that happen, Jimmy?
Well,
I grew up in Beverly Hills, California. Went to Beverly Hills High School, 90210, but there was no zip code then. Gosh, I remember we had two phones. Phones had their prefixes back then. You probably had that growing up. We had two phones, one on the front of the house, one on the back. There was CR40966 and OL25124. But that was the good old days, when they delivered milk to the door with, in glass bottles, and the bakery truck came and all the good stuff and the good humor, man. You could go out riding your bicycle with your ill-begotten stolen cards from your mother with the clothespins riding through the neighborhood.
No helmet.
Grew up in Beverly Hills. My mother was a silent film star. She worked with Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin.
Wow.
In silent movies, and did a few talkies. And when she moved, so she was born in Cleburne, Texas. And when she moved from Texas to Los Angeles, her name was Mary Thompson. They go, no, that's not star quality anymore. We'll call you Mary O'Brien. That sounds good. She had red hair, so they, go ahead and dye her hair blonde. But they always stuck these young girls with another roommate, and her roommate was this other girl who came in from, I'm not sure where. Her name was Lucille LeSueur. Now, that didn't quite roll off the tongue, unless you're, the Jolly Green Giant. So they changed her name to Joan Crawford.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was Mom's roommate. So anyway, her first husband was in vaudeville, worked on the Lucy Show a lot and stuff, was in movies and TV. And it just happened that Jack Benny, I don't know how you become a godfather. I don't think you audition for it. But anyway, Jack Benny was my godfather. And I remember, coming home and George and Gracie Burns would be over playing bridge with my parents and Jack and Mary would be there. I mean, it was no big deal. Friends with some of the Brat Pack guys. We had a place in Palm Springs. So Mom and Dad would go to a party at Sinatra's house and, put me in the back bedroom so I could watch TV while they did whatever they did. So, one of those, childhoods for me, it was just no big whoop growing up, and everybody else went, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's one story, I'll tell you, because we tell it on stage.
Sure.
The Boris Karloff, William Pratt was his real name, and a sweet man. He was at the house one day. Having tea with my mom, and he just was talking to her about the business and stuff, and he'd worked at RKO. Mom had worked at Hal Roach Studios and where the Keystone Cops worked and stuff, and they were in the living room, and we had this big glass window, and I'm riding my bike home from school, and I put the bike on the grass, and I look in the window, and I recognized him. I knew all how the actors looked without their makeup, so it wasn't any. And I'm going, oh, my God. And I ran into the house. I got on the phone. I called every kid I could and said, for 50 cents each, you can come over and meet Frankenstein. So, of course, 15 minutes later, everybody is riding their bicycles over coming in to meet Frankenstein. They're walking in going, that's not Frankenstein. Where's the zipper? Where's the bolt in the head?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's not. And that my mom, needless to say, was not happy with me. I was grounded for numerous months.
How much money did you make?
A lot.
It was worth it.
Yep.
Well, and also one of your friends, gosh, Jimmy just knew everybody. It was Jim Morrison.
Yeah, Jim was a drinking buddy. We got thrown out of places for being stupid.
Yeah.
Well. That's a polite term. We got thrown out of the Whiskey A Go-Go, which was a hard place to get thrown out of because everybody in there was always three sheets to the wind. But and he was very loud, and the polite word would be obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know who was on stage, but he lived right down the street from me, so I think we went in my car because driving was not one of his highest priority list. So we went to the Whiskey, and then, we were already pretty well gone, and by the time we got there, he started standing on the table and dancing, and the bouncers and the guy who ran the place, Mario, which was a great Italian guy, which you didn't want to get mad, came over and just was, he was cutting some slack to the Stars because everybody went to the Whiskey if they weren't playing there. And he just said, hey, you know, Jim and Jim, you know, you off the table, you shut up. And I'm going, huh? And he was fine for about 2 minutes until he ordered another, you know, bottle of champagne. And then he was right back on the table again. And next thing I know is I'm hysterically laughing and these hands are grabbing us by the necks and the bouncers are throwing us out onto the Sunset Boulevard. And we're just kind of sitting there together looking, you know, well, what do we do now? I said, well, let's go to the club up the street. Okay, we'll go up there. Well, yeah, Mario called every club on the Sunset Strip and said, do not let these guys in the club. They're 86 from every club on Sunset. That's hard to do.
Oh, my. That is. Yeah. That would be.
But he was a nice guy.
Was this before the Doors or during the Doors?
The Doors had, well, there was a club right next to the Whiskey where the Doors had their residency called the London Fog, but it was about the size of a phone booth. I mean, literally, I think you could fit 50 people in there, and that was standing room only. So they were just starting in there and doing their residency there, but they already had all the songs written. So basically all the first album stuff, all, you know, Light My Fire and Break On Through and all that stuff had already been written. And they attracted the attention of the record company and the producers. So they were ready to break out.
So wow. when you listened to Ray on the keyboard, were you thought that's a pretty good lick he came up with for Light My Fire?
Yeah, well, it's very classical oriented, and I knew all the guys in the band. He had classical training. I started taking piano lessons when I was 7 years old, and I took classical piano and did recitals and all that stuff. And some of that kind of transferred itself into subtle, you know, Three Dog Night things. Actually, the intro to Old Fashioned Love Song is kind of a classically oriented little ditty that I just kind of whipped up off the top of my head, thanks to old Ludwig von or any of those boys. But yeah, but Ray, that was a classic lick for Light My Fire that he came up with.
Oh my Lord, yes. Well, we're going to take a short break. We're with Jimmy Greenspoon. We've got a couple PSAs we're going to listen to. We'll be right back with Jimmy Greenspoon of Three Dog Night. You're listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting?
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, 1 second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We'll be back with Jimmy Greenspoon of Three Dog Night in just a moment. I want to remind everyone that this part of the program is brought to you by McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. Have you ever been to Estes Park, Colorado, Jimmy?
Yes, actually I have. I lived in Colorado for a couple of years, and Estes Park is a beautiful place. Every place in Colorado is quite nice.
Oh, amen.
Unless people do stupid things like burn it down.
Yeah, well, really. We call it God's country. And he's got McGregor Mountain Lodge is spectacular. Try on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. They've got cabins, the lodges, hot tubs, you name it. If you're planning a trip out west, and if you've never had a chance to see the Rockies in person, I'll tell you right now, folks, it's absolutely spiritual. You realize how great this planet is when you see those fantastic mountains. Go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. Their proprietor, Michael Hodges, would love to have you be a guest. And, you know, they had 22 inches of rainfall this fall and pretty much did a lot of damage to the roadways and park. But it's building back, and you can go out there, and now is the perfect time. There's nobody there, and they know how to clear snow. So if you have a big snowstorm one night, the next day the roads are cleared, and you can go wherever you want in the spectacular scenery. So go to their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. They make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Jimmy.
Thank you. I'm doing a world rock CD that I hope to get out in probably this year. But I just do all these wonderful little instrumental things and play all the parts, and I record it here in my home studio. Anything from around the world with a little bit of a rock twist, that's called Down to the Sea. So that was obviously kind of Irish, I call it Irish hip-hop. But I have a few more. I have another one called Little Irish Ditty, and then I have one called Fish and Ships. And then, of course, there's one called Kilimanjaro. Let's see, what part of the world would that be? Geography kids, Africa, good work.
Yeah.
And I have one called Denial, which is a Middle Eastern flavor. So, yeah, I just take all these ethnic instruments and my keyboards and things and create these interesting little instrumental pieces. So, like I said, I hope to have this finished and out sometime this year.
Well,
so that song, sorry to interrupt, but I do that once in a while. That song that we just listened to, it made me think, when you said it had some Irish flair or whatever, it made me think of that. And next week, you know, because it is St. Patrick's Day on Monday, I take next week, we will do a lot of nonfiction here. But one thing we do is we take a look at Ireland, and I teach the kids, you know, some things about Ireland and some traditions and all of those things. But I also, every single day, listen to traditional music from there as well. So that made me think of that. It's just something, you know, it's funny because the kids don't ever listen to that kind of music.
No.
But when I expose them to that music, suddenly they, you know, they really enjoy it. And so I think that's cool. But
if they can tell by association, you know, a certain beat or, you know, this is Middle Eastern or this is Irish music or this is music from the Orient. So they can broaden their musical spectrum and
because really, you know, kids are really, they're so limited. They listen to basically what their parents listen to.
Exactly.
And in this case, a lot of what they're listening to is things like rap, which I am not a big rap fan. But, you know, there's so many other things out there. So whenever we do study a somewhere, because we did a big thing on China, I bring the music into it because that's huge, you know. And we're losing a lot of that in our public schools.
Yeah, and this is their formative years for that kind of stuff, and their minds are a little sponges, so they could soak this up and give them something good and healthy, and you know that'll associate them with. I mean, they could, you know, who knows? So when they grow up, they could travel to another country and go, oh wow, that's the music of you know blah blah or whatever.
They need to know there's more out there.
Little learning tools.
Yep.
Absolutely. And if it's okay with you, Jimmy, we'll forward that MP3 to Mrs. Swihart's class so they can enjoy it.
Yeah, let them, you know, maybe they'll get up and dance a jig or something.
Well, you know, they love to dance, and they will break out in some moves, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And young kids have the moves.
You know, the thing is, there's not a care in the world. The innocence, and they aren't thinking, what will other people think of me? They just...
I don't know.
And that is one of the greatest things about first grade.
That's so true. I'm going to throw some names out. Some of your friends you've had over the years, Jimmy, and maybe you can tell us a little tidbit. So, everybody you've worked with. Jimi Hendrix.
Great guy, an unbelievable guitar player, a very sweet guy, introverted, very shy, believe it or not.
Like me?
Yeah, like.
Yes. And a little known fact, Jimi Hendrix was a first grade teacher. No, I'm only kidding.
Well, hey, there's some hope for me then.
Well, I guess he was incredibly, was he nearsighted or farsighted?
I think nearsighted.
Because I guess he wrecked several people's Corvettes over the years. Cause he
terrible.
And he wrecked his own guitars and stuff when he was frustrated and things. He only did that out of frustration when his amplifiers and stuff didn't work. And then all of a sudden people said, they'd come to the show going, are you going to smash your guitar again? No. Why? Everything's working great. So and I'll do one better. I'll set it on fire. Thank you very much.
There you go. Leon Russell.
Oh, incredible. I did a lot of sessions with Leon in the old days. Leon was part of the whole Joe Cocker, Mad Dogs and Englishmen. Tulsa, Oklahoma, Southern gentleman, great keyboard player.
Oh, my.
He worked with so many great people throughout the years on sessions and stuff. Just a gentleman, a sweet guy.
Friend of the show, Gary Lewis. Several of the songs in Gary Lewis and the Playboys were going. It was written with Mr. Lewis and Leon Russell.
Yeah, he did that. And actually, Gary's opened the show for us a long time ago, and we've done a lot of his dad's telethons back in the day and stuff. We just did one about, I think, 10 years ago or so. But Gary is also another one of those Beverly Hills boys.
Yeah. Well, we had another friend of the show that's been on, Tim Bogard, and you've worked with Tim Bogard,
yeah.
Appice, or however he pronounces his name.
Yeah, in fact, I did a cut on. I played on the BBA album, and then Vanilla Fudge were we were actually the opening act for Vanilla Fudge on our very first tour, but we went over so well they kicked us off the tour.
That happens, doesn't it?
Can't be too good.
Yeah.
I can remember going to a concert, and I think it was Mrs. Swihart, a Kiss concert.
Oh.
And they had an opening act, and we walked over by the soundboard, Jimmy, and all the VU meters were maxed out, so the sound was, like, bad.
Yeah.
This is for the opening act. My friend tapped his shoulder, tapped the sound guy's shoulder, says, "Hey, the VU meters are..." Well, we're sabotaging them, so that's...
Yes, we are.
That's what's going on there.
But,
yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the Beach Boys.
Beach Boys, yeah, throughout the years, all friends. Danny is still great friends with Brian. We're all friends with them. I knew Dennis and Carl real well. Brian's a friend. It was interesting because I had a surf band back in the early, mid-60s. Actually, the surf band we opened at the Surf Fair in Santa Monica, California, for the Beach Boys. That was right after their second album. They had their little Letterman sweaters with the stripes on and stuff. But prior to that, there was a group called, more trivia, you'll love the trivia, a group called Kenny and the Cadets.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a song called Barbie. It was, Barbie, Barbie, Queen of the Prom. Typical stupid 60s lyrics and stuff there. But it was by Kenny and the Cadets. They didn't want to do it. Well, they actually did a demo of it at the studio out in California, right across from the Paramount Studios, which was the old Desilu Studios for Lucy and Desi.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so for some reason, Mike Love and Brian decided that singing about Barbie, Queen of the Prom, turned down dates with Billy and Tom was not exactly what they really wanted to do. So they gave the song to my group, which was the Alley Cats.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded it and promptly went in the toilet. And about a month after that, Kenny and the Cadets changed their name to the Beach Boys. So, and then they had Surfing. So that was the end of that.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. So we've got another tune we want to play of Jimmy's. It's amazing instrumental. I bet you have too much fun when you're in your own studio putting those together.
I get up at oh dark 30. I'm up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning. I do some of my best work in recording, but I'll just sit down, or in my sleep I'll hear some little strange melody or come up with something and run downstairs. Turn on the computers, turn on the keyboards, and just start going for it. And, either more often than not, if I have to think about it, then it's too much work. It'll come to me, and I'll just have the thing done in, 15, 20 minutes. Then I'll start layering stuff. But it's really, really fun to do stuff on your own because you are your own boss.
Mm-hmm.
I can sit there and go, wow, this is the best thing since peanut butter, and then play it for my wife, and she'll go, it's all right. But the part in the middle is, and I'll go, well, this is a labor of love. She goes, yeah, but try this, and okay. Next morning, I'll get my coffee, go down, and do it, and go, wow, she's right.
Yeah,
and now it's even better. Thanks, honey.
She's usually right. I've discovered that finally.
Behind every good man is an even better woman. Right?
Oh, got to go now. Bye. No.
Oh, you know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here's something else from the fingers and mind of Jimmy Greenspan right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Pretty nice, Jimmy. Gosh.
Thank you. That's, I'll give you a bit about that one. That is the main theme for a movie that I'm scoring.
Oh.
Yeah, and well, that's interesting. The movie is not out because it hasn't started filming yet. They're still in between doing financing stages and stuff. It's based on a true story written by Kimberly Morgan. It's called Sins and the Midnight Suns. Her and her husband is in the oil business, and they went to the north slope of Alaska in the late 70s or mid-70s and lived with the Eskimos, working on the pipeline up there and then bringing actual, you know, indoor plumbing and electricity to the Eskimos, who really didn't want it. They really didn't want the white man up there at all. And the book, there's a lot of, there's murder, craziness, all types of drama that really went on, and it's so far out there and so removed that, I mean, things could happen up there, and bodies are buried up on the north slope, and, you know, you'd never know it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's called Sins of the Midnight Suns, and that's a piece, that's the main theme that will the opening scene where the plane is coming into land, like on the north slope of Alaska, and it's coming in over the oil fields, so that, you know, you've got the sweeping, you know, glaciers and all that stuff. But I'm doing it a completely unconventional way, since most people score movies by, you know, looking at the what footage
sure.
has been shot, looking at the dailies, and nothing's been shot. When they signed me up to be the musical supervisor and the score composer, Kimberly said, well, you know, here's what's going to happen. And somewhere down the line, I said, you know, I've got these ideas now that are perfect for the movie. I've read the book. I can envision this. I can just close my eyes and see something. So she said, okay, I'm going to send you the script.
Mm-hmm.
And work from the script, and the script, you know, each page is like, okay, let's say 56 seconds or a minute and 20 seconds, come up with something that is that, you know, in that time constraint, and you know, do whatever it's on the written page. So
sure.
That I'm actually scoring a good, I'd say, third of the movie just by the script, just by the written word alone, without, you know, seeing any films. And then once, of course, the film is shot and edited, then I'll go in and write some more pieces to that the standard way. But it's kind of like a backwards way, but everyone who hears that goes, and then reads the book, goes, that is perfect.
Wow.
And every piece I send her, she goes, that's great. And then I say, okay, here's one for page 72. And I'll, you know, send her the thing, and she'll be reading page 72 going, oh, my God, that's exactly what I envisioned. I said, okay, thank you. So that's Sins of the Midnight Suns. Look for it in your theaters, hopefully in the next year or so.
Well.
And that's the main theme. Undiscovered.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
We need
you.
when your CD comes out, Jimmy, we need to bring you back and listen to more of your selections. It would be absolutely amazing.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Gosh, Dr. Day, what a great show tonight.
No kidding. Like
are
I
you?
Said,
are we done?
That
yeah.
I had the sensation of flying when I heard that piece. It was like my father was a pilot and taught us all to fly. But I just had the sensation that I was flying, so that's perfect.
Thank you. Yeah. The you know, the planes flying in over the ice with the, you know, the skis landing on the glacier. So it'll be a pretty interesting project once it's done.
So, Mrs. Swihart, you'll be diving into the Three Dog Night catalog now, I assume.
I will, because you know how I am. You know me by now.
Yeah.
Yep, and then of course I would love to have some music, or I would love to have something autographed, of course. But you know, beggars can't be choosers. But but I am the best first grade teacher, you know.
Well,
so
that's true.
Love.
Yeah, also the shyest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me tell you something. You don't get very far in life unless you like stir up a little trouble, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So. Yeah. I've stirred a little in my day.
Yeah.
It's all been for the good of the kids, though.
Yeah, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy, it was great to have you on the show. I hope you had a good time.
Great. Thank you for having me on the show. It was great.
Oh, what wonderful.
And now you can get to bed, because obviously it's...
You've got to get up at 4:30.
If you're, yeah, it's past, oh, whoa, 5 after 10.
Yeah.
Oh.
Rock and roll.
I'm working a few more hours.
Rock and rollers are going, what? I'm just getting up now. No, no, sorry.
Yeah.
Next week on the program, Joe Vitale joins us. Do you know Joe, Jimmy?
Yes. Tell Joe hello.
I certainly will. And have a great week, everybody. You've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Thank
Good
you.
Night.
Jimmy. Great show.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.